Andrius Lavrikos, and welcome to ILGA Europe's very first Equality Pod, coming to you from our annual conference in The Hague. This podcast is a brand new project, giving a louder voice to the fight for equality across the European Union and beyond. We will be with you every 2 months, so please subscribe via the ILGA Europe website or via iTunes. And get in touch. You can email us at theequalitypod@ilga-europe.org or find us on Facebook or follow on Twitter. In our first edition, Putting the I into LGBT, we will look at why and how we represent the rights of intersex people. Also ahead, challenging our own prejudices, we will be joined by a panel of special guests and will have latest equality news from across Europe. But first, we want to explain a little about who we are and what we're doing here. For those of you who are not familiar with us, ILGA Europe is the European branch of ILGA, the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association. It is a non-governmental umbrella organization representing some 300 groups at European level. I am the communications manager, but what is ILGA Europe trying to achieve? Evelyn Paradis is ILGA Europe Executive Director, and Maxime Anmegikan is Programs Director. Evelyn, what are the main objectives of ILGA Europe?
ILGA Europe's main objectives I would summarize in two main points. On one hand, we want to contribute as part of the global LGBTI movement to advancing the recognition of human rights for LGBTI people. And how we do that is through advocacy in Europe with the available institutions in Europe. So with the European Union, with the Council of Europe, and with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. So we want to be contributing to this global recognition that LGBTI rights are human rights. And the other big objective that we have is to build the movement and to build a very strong movement in Europe to contribute to the capacity of LGBT groups across Europe so that they are all able to advocate for the rights of LGBTI communities and to represent them effectively.
Maxime, Evelyn already explained a little bit about advocacy and lobbying work ILGA Europe is conducting. Can you maybe give us a little bit of an overview of the programs you are running and what exactly you are doing?
ILGA Europe has been involved for the number of years already, obviously with its membership, in developing their capacity to achieve social change. So we organize trainings for them on how to do an advocacy campaign, how to run an information campaign, how to work with your local authorities, with the national level authorities, what entry points there may be, what are the international standards in relation to human rights of LGBT people, how they can use European institutions as well to advocate for change at the national level. So this is the kind of trainings, guidelines, manuals. This is also partly how our website is structured. We're providing in various ways, through various channels, this information and the skills to the activists. We also engage with LGBT organizations across Europe in partnership projects. For example, we work with the Network of European LGBT Family Associations and with the Transgender Council of Europe. We also work with national level organizations. We have a project that we run in the Balkans in 4 countries. We have a large project that we run in Russia. And there we don't only share our skills and expertise, but also provide necessary financial resources so that these organizations are able to run their offices, to provide services for the communities, and to engage in meaningful advocacy campaigns with their governments. And probably our listeners have heard about the Belgrade Pride or about the Moscow Pride, some of the flash mobs, Week Against Homophobia, that have happened in Russia, the film festival Side by Side, Prides in Chisinau, in Nikolaev. And this would be one of the visible parts of the results of the work that we're doing with our membership. We've been present in all these events. We've been doing monitoring, producing reports. For some of these events, we'll help them organize it and provided financial resources necessary to do these kinds of events.
Evelyn, what would you think are the main challenges and obstacle for ILGA Europe to achieve its aims?
Well, the obstacles are at very different levels. Of course, advocating for the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, and intersex people, regardless of where you are, you need to be facing prejudices that exist in society at large, stereotypes, lack of knowledge, lack of understanding of the issues. And so that's an ongoing challenge that I think the ILGA Europe staff, but all of the members face on a daily basis. That's one of the obstacles that we will have for a long time. But in the more political work that ILGA Europe does, I think one of the current challenges is the political context in Europe, which is leaning towards more social conservatism, the economic context, which is not very positive, where there are lots of cutbacks, where there's a lot of move towards stopping policies and inequality because they're seen as being costly. So in this context, it's harder to be demanding rights, it's harder to be demanding programs and policies that advance the rights of the LGBTI community, just like for any other community.
And how do you see our new podcast helping us in our advocacy and lobbying work to achieve our aims?
Well, I think it's an excellent, very clear example of how you start breaking through stereotypes, how you start providing knowledge, how you start getting the message out there for people to know what ILGA Europe is about, but mostly what LGBTI rights are about, and whether it is for the population in general, whether it is about policymakers, whether it is about employers or anyone, I think knowledge is the starting point to address most of the obstacles that we are facing.
And Maxim, the office of ILGA Europe is based in Brussels, but we're here now in The Hague for our 14th annual conference this week. How many people are here and what are they doing here?
This is the biggest event of the year in Europe for LGBT activists. All across Europe, we have currently here in The Hague over 260 people from about 40 countries. They're here to strategize about the future of the LGBTI movement in Europe, to come up with new, better ideas about how we can make social change possible at various levels, to hear each other's best practices, experiences from the past few years and to learn from them, and to do the networking, to establish the contact. Some activists pop around, meet with funders, with policymakers and shapers. This is the event, the happening, where you can, as an activist, get a lot out from the workshops to the panel sessions where keynote speakers, bright individuals, professors, policymakers are sharing their ideas about the future of the movement, about the new opportunities, possibilities. We decide together, we discuss together how we can seize these opportunities in a better way. So this is an amazing event, and for everyone who is anyone in the European LGBT movement, this is the right place to be.
In a moment, we'll be putting some questions to you from ILGA Europe members. First, though, we have been out and about around the conference venue to see just what being a member means to people.
My first one was 2001 in Rotterdam. We were housed in the local youth hostel in Rotterdam. And the first thing I saw when I entered my room was a naked Bulgarian. That kind of set the tone for the conference. People have fun. People learn a lot. People get inspired, I hope. People develop new network contacts. And I sincerely hope they develop new friendships.
Well, I personally just sucked up all of the information that was here.
For me, it's important because it's like a continuation of our work. I always feel that I'm part of international community, and it's like strong motivation for me for work.
So here we go. This is what our members express. This is what they think. Now back to the questions from our members directly to you. The first question I would probably ask to ask Max, it's coming from Vera Kimpiano from Accept in Romania. And her question is, considering the conference theme on diversity, how is ILGA Europe ensuring gender balance in its work and activities?
In practical terms, for us, that means that, for example, when we award scholarships for participants in the conference, we make sure that female participants get the priority in being awarded a scholarship. If we have applicants from the same country, 4 or 5 men and 1 or 2 women, clearly we'll make sure that the representatives of the country are balanced in their representation, gender balanced at the conference. We also make sure, obviously, that the panels, the workshops, all the speakers, that there is a gender balance in it as well. But of course, it's not only about participation, it's also about making sure that the program of the conference addresses the needs of various constituencies of the groups that we work with.
And I have another question from Igor Kochetov from Russian LGBT Network. What new opportunities for promoting the rights of LGBT people in the former USSR countries do you envisage?
I think we haven't seized yet the opportunities that were already there. These are the countries in which the change doesn't come fast. Obviously, in all countries it doesn't come fast, but the movements are relatively young. We've came out of communism only 20 years ago, 19 years ago. And there is in some countries, homosexuality was only decriminalized as late as 2003. So there is still a long road to go. At the same time, I think there are opportunities at the European level with the European institutions. We are engaging more and more with the European Union, the human rights dialogues and consultations with third countries, including Moldova, Ukraine, Russia, where the EU is very strong and has been raising in the last few years the rights of LGBTI people. Obviously, Council of Europe, recommendation of the Committee of Ministers, which will have a particular impact, I hope, in the ex-USSR countries. Obviously, because no other instrument is fully available to the same extent, for example, like the EU instrument. So I hope that the activists will make full use of this recommendation. All of the former USSR countries, except for Central Asia, have signed up to this recommendation and they need to be held accountable. At the same time, the work that activists are doing on the ground needs to be continued.
Well, Evelyn, Max, thank you very much for taking time talking to us today.
Thank you.
Now, here is Matthew Charles with a roundup of this month's equality news.
As we've been hearing, more than 200 activists from LGBTI organisations across Europe have been gathering in The Hague for ILGA Europe's 14th annual conference. Delegates were welcomed by the Dutch Minister for LGBT and Gender Equality. Maria van Bijsterveld said the battle for equality is yet to be won. In Moscow, Orthodox organisations gathered to demonstrate against pride marches and same-sex marriage. 1,000 protesters called for an end to what they say is immoral propaganda. Earlier this year, Moscow city authorities banned a pride march for the 5th time, a move that was condemned by the European Court of Human Rights. Activist Peter Tatchell described the court's ruling as a triumph for gay rights. Several people have been attacked in Uganda after a local newspaper published their names and photos saying they were homosexual. One woman was reportedly almost killed after her neighbours attacked her with stones. Activists in Kampala say that most of those whose names appeared in Uganda's Rolling Stone paper have been harassed. If you have a story you'd like us to report, please email us at theequalitypod@ilga-europe.org or send us a message on Twitter @theequalitypod.
Now, from LGB to LGBT, and now, of course, LGBTI. So why and how do we represent the rights of intersex people? Dan Gutters from organization Intersex International with me today. What does I refer to?
Well, the I refers to the inter or intersex people.
Can you guide us through what are the similarities and links between homosexuality, trans identities and intersex?
I think the similarities are about gender expression, about normalization treatment, the aim of certain parts of society to normalize people who don't fit into the binary system of male and female. That goes for homosexual people, that goes, of course, for trans people, and that goes for intersex people, too, who have to undergo or are in danger of experiencing surgery in a very early age because they don't fit in.
Mm. So it is a positive thing for I to be included in LGBTI.
It is very complex, and one has to be very aware of the fact that lots of inter people don't like to be connected with the LGBT movement. Some don't feel like they're being... They don't have anything to do with LGBT, Some intersex people think that, especially T people, trans people, are crazy. So, as everyone, intersex people share the common opinion of the of society. But on the other hand, as I already said, there are lots of similar experiences, or there can be similar experiences. So, in this case, it's really important to work together for the common good.
Okay, and now we have Richard Köhler and Carla Lagata from Transgender Europe with me. There has been a very similar debate around the T in LGBT. Why it is important to include T?
It is an interesting debate because trying to name something that has been there since the very beginning is always a funny thing. If we remember Stonewall, the first line of the riots, there were not only gay men and lesbian women and bisexual people, but there were trans people. Who had nowhere to go and nowhere to go back to the closet, and they were very fiercely fighting the police. So trying to bring together in our minds today what has been there always is kind of like a step that we were obliged to do a long time ago. But nevertheless, there are a lot of common issues that we where we can find commonalities in. First of all, the violence we are facing on the streets and in our homes is very often, it has the same ugly face, homophobia and transphobia. People on the street attacking us do not make the differentiation. Do you identify as trans or as gay? They see a deviation from a gender perspective, from a gender performance. Secondly, the LGBT community always had the trans included because trans people also are gay men, they're lesbian women, they're bisexual of other gender identity. And also, we have to see that a lot of structures are now in place, developed and fought for by the LGBT community over the last decades, and that especially within Europe, with a stronger growing trans movement and with clearer demands, there are more activists from the LGBT community ready to take up trans issues and to fight for those issues because they understand that there are very severe human rights violations going on.
First of all, it is important to build alliances to fight for people's rights, and secondly, it's we can learn from each other and can develop new strategies. And of course, trans means in a different dimension, but also like intersex means a different understanding of our binary system, which we have to question.
So does it help to be labeled as one group, LGBTI?
It really depends on the perspective. I see the cooperation between Inner Europe and Transgender Europe as very important, and it's a very good cooperation because it's cooperation among equals. And so this is very important, not only to have LGBTI groups, but also to cooperate with groups that are specific to some identities. So I would prefer the model having ILGA Europe as an LGBTI umbrella organization, but still cooperating with trans or intersex organizations in a way ILGA Europe is doing it at the moment, because this cooperation is very fruitful and very empowering for us.
And Richard, whilst we're building one LGBTI movement, does Europe and the European institutions see us as one group?
That was actually one point I wanted to make, that who is labeling whom? One thing is if we label ourselves or find strength in finding our commonalities, but also making clear where the differences lay within our LGBTI community. But on the other hand, I think from the perspective of those outside the LGBTI community, and especially in regard to policymakers and the wider public, we are very differently perceived, and there is very little natural links that are made by policymakers, I would say, from all of those issues. And I think for trans people, it is still very important, as it is for inter people, to leave the hegemony of the medical discourse, because it is usually seen as a medical condition, so it needs to be either the medical staff or the policymakers who make the decisions about and for trans people. Whereas if they would understand that we're kind of lumped together with LGBTI, people, then yes, we are human rights activists and defenders on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And this is much broader, and this should also policymakers give them the opportunity to actually come up with solutions that suit all of us and not only a particular group.
Hmm. Do you think there is a danger of us being categorized as one gray group by our attempt to work together and perceived by the institution and media society in general?
No, I think it doesn't. If we talk about the differences and the similarities, which shouldn't happen and which has happened with the eye in the past, for example, also by trans people, which is a problem within the communication between trans and inter, that some groups of trans people have, well, included the eye without knowing anything about the life experience of eye people. And so it's very important for eye to work with groups like TGU or with ILGA who don't do this, the same mistake.
I think it's very important that we realize that it's about sexual orientation and gender identity if we bring all those different identities together, so that we have a real balanced perception of these groups. And it's not only LGBT, LGB and then T or I, but it's sexual orientation and gender identity. So we have to see both parts of the movement and both big issues.
I would rather say that gray is certainly not our problem. I mean, we might be coming out of a gray invisibility, especially for new arising topics around trans and inter, but also very specific issues related to that people of same-sex orientation are facing. But we are a colorful group where we should not limit ourselves to seek our similarities and our identities, but to strengthen our fight and the issues we are facing. And if you're going down on the fact base, then it's much easier also like to find even more a bigger audience and even more allies. And yes, we are confusing people, but it's definitely not a great confusion that we are causing. But it's the good confusion that is the precondition for learning, for understanding, and for extending our knowledge, all of our knowledge, not only within the LGBT community, but within the wider public area.
Okay, so obviously there is no danger of grey area, and we're definitely stronger together.
Sure.
Well, thank you very much, Carla, Dan, Richard. And here is Matthew again with more news.
The President of the European Parliament has condemned the violence that hit the streets of Belgrade during the city's Pride March. Jerzy Buzek said that Parliament was opposed to homophobia both inside and outside the EU. More than 100 people were injured after anti-gay demonstrators clashed with police in the Serb capital. The US school board official, who wrote on his Facebook page that queers and fags should kill themselves, says he'll resign. Clint McCants, who's the vice president of the Midland School District in Arkansas, said he was sorry for his hurtful remarks. UK activists have launched a campaign to end the ban on gay marriage and heterosexual civil partnerships. An opinion poll in 2009 found that 61% of the British public believe that gay couples should be allowed to marry. And veteran actress Betty White says she supports gay marriage and doesn't understand how people can oppose it so much. The 88-year-old former star of the American comedy show Golden Girls said people should mind their own business.
Time now to debate the conference theme, which is expressing our differences, challenging our prejudices, and developing our alliances. To talk about what that means in practice, I'm joined by Kamal Qureshi, a member of the Danish Parliament, Mieke Verlo from the Institute of Gender Studies here in the Netherlands, and by Francois Sant'Angelo from the Council of Europe's Commissions Against Racism and Intolerance. Thank you for being here today with us. Let's start with Mieke. What do you think are the strategies for building alliances with other movements and minority groups?
Equality is never undivided. I mean, most people know this about human rights, that human rights are one and undivided. But it's the same with equality. So that means you can very well have a movement that chooses one axis of inequality that you predominantly focus on. But you always should be aware that you will never be able to reach the goal for your own group if you don't take into account the other ones, because the other ones are present in your own group as well. If you don't pay attention to this, you will make strategies that benefit the middle class, the heterosexual, the rich, the able-bodied within your movement. This is not what you want. So you have to always take account of other inequalities. And often you can do that by synergies with other movements. And this you can do on an ad hoc basis, I think. So you can choose projects or demonstrations or single things that you can do where on one point or another you have something in common with another movement. Because often movements are like competing with each other, but the real enemy are not in the other movements. The real opponents are out there. Are out there in big capitalist corporations, out there in right-wing governments, and that's where you have a joint interest.
Thank you very much, Miki. I would like to ask my next question to Kamal. Do you think there is something LGBTI movement can learn from other movements, considering that our movement is relatively youngest?
And definitely, I think there are a lot to be learned from many other groups that have been fighting for their rights. I could go back and mention the Jewish group as probably one of the oldest in a short-term basis. I think the women movement is also a very good example. But I also think it's important that the LGBT movement know that within themselves there is a lot of resourceful people, and they have access to a lot of media, they have access to attention, and they can use this attention very positively in a manner so you make alliances to other minority groups, so you kind of create a common boundary, because I think that it's important to be generous when you have the capacity to be generous. On the other basis, at looking at the numbers, the LGBT movement is not strong. And on that basis, they could join forces when there are demonstrations with the women organizations, with the gender equality organization. So I think it's important to know where are your forces, and where is it that you need someone, and where is it that other would need you, and try to make an alliance with that.
François, recently the Council of Europe adopted recommendations on how European countries should fight discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. What are the practical implications of that? Will there be a strong mechanism established by the Commission Against Racism and Intolerance, ECRI, to keep the European countries in line with the recommendations?
We know that the most important group of people, minority within discriminate, is Roma. That's true, but they said, don't forget, please, the LGBT groups in the media and so on. There is a lot of hate which is disseminated and so on. And so we see that on the two level, on the highest level of Council of Europe, and also on the basis, there is a strong solicitation to ECRI, and so I hope that we can join this objective to integrate these issues in our preoccupation for the future. We have to fight into the plenary, but I think we can reach that.
That's great. Thank you very much, François. There is definitely a ray of hope in here. Thank you. And I would like to come back to Kamal. One of the topics of this conference is addressing the diversity within the LGBTI movement itself. And how do you think it is important to be truly representative? What does it mean in practice?
I think that for a minority movement, it's very, very important that you are capable of being truly representative of the people that you are speaking on the behalf of, or you won't be able to tell the society that they have to do it. And I think that definitely there has been these discussions in the LGBT movement whether to involve the transgender community. It has happened now in many countries, in most countries, and also at a European level. The ethnic minorities within the LGBT movement is also important to have them represented, because there is a tendency that it becomes very much that we have to learn the ethnic minorities to do this and this and this, or they are doing. So if you have to avoid this they and us and say we have to do this, you have to involve them and you have to include the groups that you are saying that you want to work for. So I think that it does give an organization, a movement, credibility if you are also involving the people that you're talking on the behalf of.
Mm. And my last question to Miki again. What is your vision of LGBTI movement in, let's say, next 5 to 7 years?
Well, I think that ILGA Europe is a very strong force, and I very much hope that they will continue to be so in 5 or 7 years, because I cannot imagine that it wouldn't be needed anymore, unfortunately. So I still hope they would have achieved that across Europe, what is now the highest standard of equality is been adopted by everyone at that time. I do hope that by then there will be no need anymore to establish numbers about how big the violence against LGBTI people is, because they will know that, and I hope they will have come up with some ideas what to do against it. And I also hope that this will not, this is more like a vision that I hope very strongly that in trying to get there, this will not be done by crushing other people. Who are then to be blamed for something that did not happen yet. So, because at any pride where there was any counter movement, they have always been extreme right wing groups. So this is the real opponent, and I hope they will not get mistaken at some point in seeing any other one as the real enemy.
Okay, we'll have to revisit those objectives in 5 years and see where we are at then.
Yeah.
Well, we're at the end of this first edition of the Equality Pod. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we have. You can listen on iTunes or on our website, ilga-europe.org. If you have something you would like us to discuss, please email us at theequalitypod@ilga-europe.org, and please follow us on Twitter. We'll be back in January, looking at the EU's controversial anti-discrimination directive. Why do we need it? And how can we convince member states to sign up to it? Let us know your thoughts. It's goodbye from The Hague, and thank you for listening to the Equality Pod.